Welcome to Cut and Thrust, your podcast for the bloody and sometimes bizarre journey through the Middle Ages. Whether it's dark battles, questionable hygiene, or hair-raising rulers, here you'll get history as it really was, raw and unfiltered. So grab your sword, put on your helmet, and let's dive into the wild world of the past.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Better Merchant Podcast. I'm Hendrik.
And I'm Carmen. And today we're talking about a topic that movies usually skip over completely.
That's right. We're discussing medieval warfare, but not sword fights or sieges, rather what happened before all that.
The invisible battle, so to speak. Months of preparation before a single sword was ever drawn.
And that's what fascinates me time and again. A knight in the Middle Ages, he didn't just ride off like in the movies. He brought an entire household with him.
We're talking about a small traveling party here. Squires, cooks, grooms, sometimes even family members. This wasn't a lone figure on horseback.
With a so-called lance, the smallest military unit, we're talking about
a handful, up to 10 or 12 people.
Yes, in the High Middle Ages indeed. The knight himself, his squire as armor bearer, then one or two sword and spear fighters, plus archers, foot soldiers, baggage train servants for supplies.
And the crazy thing is, the knight had to finance all of this himself. The equipment, the wages, the horses. It was an enormous financial burden.
That's why households varied so much in size. A wealthy knight might have 15 or 20 people with him. A poorer one, perhaps only 5 or 6.
I actually know this from reenactment. On a much smaller scale, of course. But even when just 10 of us travel to a market, the coordination is a real challenge. Who brings which tent? Who cooks? Who has the tools?
And now imagine that without mobile phones.
Without any modern long-distance communication.
That's the point. These campaigns had to be planned months in advance. And coordination was mainly done through messengers on horseback.
Plus acoustic signals, like horns and drums. And visual signals, flags, pennants, coats of arms.
The challenge was, how do I explain this best? It's similar to planning a major event today, but every message takes 3 days.
And can get lost along the way.
Exactly. Or the messenger gets held up. Or he misunderstands the message. At the Battle of Worringen in 1288, there's a chronicle about it, it's recorded that foot soldiers could no longer tell friend from foe. They ended up striking at random.
How did they solve that?
Pre-arranged meeting points, detailed agreements months in advance, and lots of improvisation on the spot.
That also explains why so many campaigns failed due to logistics rather than the fighting itself.
Absolutely. An army marches on its stomach, as Napoleon aptly put it later. You need food, wine, tents, supplies for man and beast, and all of that has to be transported.
By people, horses, and wagons. Over roads that often didn't deserve the name.
The famous Roman roads were still the best option. Once you left those, good luck making any progress.
And then there was the bureaucracy to deal with. For valuable horses, you needed safe conduct letters or transit passes issued by the local lord or the city. Tolls were due at border crossings. You couldn't just ride off.
This whole machinery, it ran in the background before a single fighter drew his sword. To me, that's the true masterpiece of the Middle Ages.
That nobody sees.
That's true. In films, the preparation takes 30 seconds. In reality, it was months of meticulous planning. Merchants were hired, contracts negotiated, routes established.
And if anything went wrong, price disputes with traders, supply shortages, sick horses, it could jeopardize the entire campaign.
That's why I find this topic so fascinating. Logistics was often more important than combat skills. A perfectly trained knight is useless if he arrives on the battlefield hungry and exhausted.
Or if his war horse fell ill along the way.
Yes. And speaking of war horses, transporting these animals, especially during overseas campaigns, is a chapter all its own.
The supply of an army. That was the real key to success. Not the number of knights or the quality of the weapons.
Right. The supply chain was often more decisive than the raw fighting power at the front.
And when you look at everything that had to be transported, food, wine, tents, spare weapons, tools, feed for the horses.
And the horse feed was often the biggest item.
How so?
A cavalry horse needed a good 10 kilos of hay per day. That's quite a lot. Plus 20 to 60 liters of water, depending on exertion. And during heavy work, meaning combat or a long march, an additional 1 to 3 kilos of oats on top.
Those are enormous quantities, with an army of several hundred horses.
We're talking tons per day.
And it was no less complicated for the men. The rough estimate was about 1 kilo of grain per man per day. Sometimes more, sometimes less. Sources vary between 800 grams and 1.5 kilos, depending on what was available.
Then came the distribution of resources. Most of it always went to grain. That was the absolute staple. The rest was divided among meat, cheese, legumes, and wine.
That shows the priorities. Grain was the foundation. Everything else was basically a luxury.
And now the question arises, how do you transport all of this?
There were basically three options. People, horses, and...
wagons! And each had its limitations.
People could only carry limited loads. Horses themselves needed feed that had to be brought along. And wagons were slow and dependent on decent roads.
Which was often a problem in the Middle Ages. Away from the old Roman roads, things quickly got difficult.
That's why there was also a natural size limit for armies. Beyond a certain point, it was simply impossible to bring in enough supplies.
That also explains why armies couldn't stay in one place for long. Food and firewood in the surrounding area were quickly depleted.
And plundering wasn't an option?
Less effective than you'd think. The local population often had little themselves, and naturally hid everything they
could, understandably.
So they had to rely on merchants.
And this is where it gets interesting. Merchants were indispensable for supplying larger armies, but naturally, they exploited the situation.
Wartime prices. When an army desperately needs supplies, and you're the only trader nearby,
then you dictate the terms. This repeatedly led to conflicts between commanders and merchants.
There are documented cases where merchants were outright boycotted because their demands were too high. But that meant...
no supplies. A vicious circle.
And that's exactly why many campaigns failed, not because of the enemy, but because of logistics. The supply line was often an army's most vulnerable point.
This reminds me again of my reenactment experiences. We already talked about coordination, but just planning meals for a weekend with 30 people is already a science in itself.
How do you handle that?
With smoked meat, hard cheese, hard tech, anything that keeps without refrigeration. And still, everything has to be planned precisely. Who's responsible for which meal? Which ingredients last how long?
But you have the advantage of knowing beforehand when the event ends. In the Middle Ages, the duration of a campaign was often completely uncertain.
And we can drive to the nearest petrol station if we have to. They didn't have that option. When the supplies ran out,
the battle was often already lost, before it had even begun.
And that brings us to another logistical nightmare, the horses themselves, especially when it came to overseas campaigns. So, transporting supplies was sorted, at least in theory, but the travelling itself was another challenge entirely.
And this had aspects you wouldn't expect. We already mentioned the bureaucracy earlier, and that's a good example. For the horses alone, you already needed various documents.
Bureaucracy in the Middle Ages?
Indeed, yes. For valuable horses, there were ownership certificates, essentially proof that the animal belonged to you and wasn't stolen. And at border crossings, you needed safe conduct letters, in Latin salvus conductus, or toll receipts. It varied greatly depending on the region.
That makes sense when you consider how valuable a good war horse was. It was worth as much as a small farm.
And that's why border posts wanted to know exactly who was passing through with which animals. This naturally slowed everything down even more.
Then there was the road network, or rather, the lack of a unified network. There was no central authority building or maintaining roads.
What the Romans had left behind was often the best available. These roads were paved, had drainage ditches, were usually 4 to 6 meters wide, even wider for main roads.
And straight as an arrow. They built tunnels and bridges just to avoid detours.
And many of these roads were still usable in the High Middle Ages. In Italy and southern France, they were even remarkably well preserved.
Oh, that explains why so many medieval trade routes followed the old Roman ones.
The Via Domitia, for example. It connected Italy with Spain, first over the Alps at the Col de Montgenèvre, then through southern Gaul and across the Pyrenees, nearly 600 kilometers. Centuries after the Romans, still a major artery.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. Feeling curious? Then head over to battlemerchant.com. They've got all sorts of medieval stuff, from costumes to armor and loads more. Totally worth a look.
But as soon as you left these Roman roads, it got difficult. Unpaved paths that turned into muddy trails after every rain. Steep climbs, detours through valleys.
That naturally determined the marching speed. An army might cover per day, maybe...
Roughly how far?
Well, 20 to 15... No, 15 to 25 kilometers. In good weather and on good roads. In mud or mountains, considerably less.
That sounds like not much. But you have to consider, horses need regular rest breaks. They can't just march through like machines.
Breaks every few hours. Water, feed, hoof checks. And if a horse went lame, it delayed the entire train.
The Vikings and Normans had a different approach. They mainly used rivers and coastal routes.
Because ships could carry more?
And were faster. A longship could sail far inland up rivers. That was an enormous tactical advantage. You suddenly appear where nobody expects you.
But with larger overseas campaigns, it got complicated. Just transporting troops and equipment to the coast was already a...
mammoth logistical task.
Hundreds, sometimes thousands of men with their equipment, horses, provisions for weeks. All of that had to arrive at a port in a coordinated manner.
And then came the real problem, loading onto ships, especially with the war horses.
These weren't ordinary horses. War horses were trained war animals. Large, heavy, often stallions, but also many geldings, and, depending on the region, mares too.
With the temperament to match, they were hoisted aboard with slings and winches,
Imagine the chaos.
Several nervous stallions in close quarters, viewing each other as rivals.
Fighting each other. You can well imagine that. Stallions going at each other on the ship.
An injured warhorse before the actual battle even began. That was an enormous loss, financially and militarily.
That's why they tried to separate the animals. But space on a medieval ship was limited.
And the crossing itself was also a risk. Storms, seasickness in man and beast, spoiled supplies.
All of that before an enemy was even in sight. The actual battle was almost the easy part.
But before we get to the conclusion, let's take another closer look at the horses. I'd say it's one of the most underrated achievements of all time. Pure organizational mastery without modern tools.
Absolutely. It becomes especially tangible when you look at the scale of a specific campaign that depended entirely on this logistics.
Right. Sea transport was the ultimate challenge.
Because you couldn't just stop and forage for feed?
Not just that. You were at the mercy of the weather. And the animals themselves were an enormous stress factor in confined spaces.
That makes sense.
A prime example of overcoming all these problems can be found in English history.
You're talking about the Norman invasion?
Yes, exactly that one.
That must have been an incredible challenge.
The most famous example is probably William the Conqueror in 1066. For the Norman invasion of England, he had to bring his cavalry across the English Channel.
How many horses was that?
Estimates suggest about 2,000 horses. Contemporary sources like the Roman de Roux mention 700 ships. Modern historians estimate the number of horses at around 2,000.
And on the Bayeux Tapestry, that famous embroidery depicting the invasion, you can actually see horses being unloaded from the ships.
Via ramps at the bow of the ships. The tapestry shows a total of 190 horses, over 600 people and 32 ships, all counted. At the landing, in the battle, everywhere.
William was lucky with the weather. The crossing was calm, no major losses documented. But that was the exception.
In bad weather, on longer crossings, it was a different story. Storms, seasickness, spoiled feed. The losses could be considerable.
And that brings us to the, well, when you put it all together.
It's a logistical masterpiece.
After all that, after months of planning, after assembling the households, after the provisioning, the transport over land and sea, not a single battle had yet taken place.
Yes. And that's what I find so fascinating about this topic. The invisible battle that had to be fought before every visible one.
It also reveals something about the people of the Middle Ages. This ingenuity, this determination, this organizational ability.
They had no computers, no radio communication, not even reliable maps. Yet they moved armies across continents and fought battles that changed history.
That deserves respect. When we watch films today where armies appear out of nowhere, now we know what really lay behind it.
And with that, we've reached the end of today's episode. We hope you had as much fun as we did diving into this world of medieval logistics.
If you found this topic interesting, feel free to visit battlemerchant.com. On the blog, you'll find many more fascinating articles about medieval history.
And of course, the right equipment, should you want to tackle logistical challenges at a reenactment event yourself.
Until next time.
Take care.
And so we ride towards the end of this episode. Keep your sword sharp and your mugs full. We'll catch you in the next one.